This is Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, hour two of the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI. We are with you up until 6:30. What do we got going on at 6:30?
Bruins pregame.
Bruins pregame, 6:30. Okay. I wanted to ask you a question. We're going back into the Patriots here because I thought of something. I want to ask you a question, Ben.
Yeah.
Do you think at any point as the sun sets on Tom Brady's career, while he's still playing for the Patriots, do you think at any point there will be somebody else who gets off the bus before Tom Brady for the New England Patriots? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, first guy in, first guy out,
well,
that type of thing.
The best player.
Oh,
the,
no, the marquee
star,
attraction.
The marquee guy on the team. Is there anybody else?
No.
So then I give the Patriots no hope. They're not going to win. Because think of this.
What do you mean they're not going to win? You mean three years down the line?
I think as Tom Brady ages,
yep,
it's going to be very hard for them to win if he is the guy that still is the one getting off the bus first. I think it'll be very hard for the Patriots to win going forward if Tom Brady is still the one getting off the bus first, and you don't seem to think that anybody else will be there to get off in front of him.
No, in terms of the marquee attraction for the team, no, it's always going to be Brady because it's the Patriots. He was built with the Patriots. It's always going to be Tom Brady. I know what you mean in terms of, you know, generally what you're saying is you need to get some more star power in here. You need to get to surround him with some better players here for the end.
Generally what I'm saying is aging quarterbacks usually need the help and typically are not the first guy off the bus, so to speak, if this was a Friday Night Light situation. Example, Peyton Manning, 2015. Von Miller was the first guy off that bus.
Yep.
John Elway, 1998. Terrell Davis was the first guy off that bus.
Yep.
Those guys were off the bus in front of the quarterback. Now, Manning, Elway still were important. Elway more so than Manning, still contributed. Still were game changers even, but they weren't the best player on the team. And I fear, based on Bill Belichick's reputation, how he does business, bargain basement, Brady will never, and also because of the way the NFL is, Brady will always be the best player on the Patriots. And I worry that they won't be able to win if that's the case. Now, maybe part of the reason is because this is the way the NFL is now.
Who's the best player on the Saints?
Drew Brees.
Yeah, he's 1 year younger. You know.
Yeah, but have they won anything? They haven't won anything.
No, but they look like a damn good football. They look like a better football team than the Patriots
call
right
me,
now.
Call me when they win. They've got to win. They've got to win something first.
I understand, but right now I can't judge what's going to happen in February because I don't know. But as of right now, they look like one, if not the best, the second best football team in the NFL.
And again, the NFL, maybe the NFL today just screws everything I just said.
Well, it does to a certain extent because of the earlier conversation about defenses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You can't get to the quarterback. You can't hit the quarterback the same way. They're not going to break down at 33 like they would in 1984. You know, the quarterbacks are going to have a much longer shelf life in the NFL with the way the rules have evolved and adapted, basically to protect them at all costs.
And I should just add, I'm more talking not this year. I'm more talking about the future.
Next
year, the year after. More so than this year. But it's still, I mean, could Josh Gordon be the best player on this team? Could Gronk?
No, Gronk's done.
Gronk's probably not going to be that guy. He's with Brady. I just think that they could use somebody
Gronk right now is not the best player on the offense regardless. Take Tom Brady out. It's Edelman.
Yeah.
Edelman's a better player than Rob Gronkowski is right now, period.
And it's got to be a guy. It has to be a guy that is at an important position.
It's not going
to
be your left guard.
No.
It's not going to be Logan Mankins coming back.
Or even I know Aaron Donald's really good. Even Aaron Donald's more of a pass rusher, too. Vince Wilfork wasn't much of a pass rusher. Even a Vince Wilfork, as good as he was, it can't be Vince Wilfork. A nose tackle isn't important enough. That's just not an important position as much as a quarterback or other positions. Now, if there was a safety, if there was a running back, if there was a maybe not a running back, a big-time wide receiver.
Sure. If there was a running back, if Le'Veon Bell decided to sign with the Patriots next year, and the Patriots were like, screw this Sonny Michel guy, screw White, we're getting rid of everyone because we're bringing in Le'Veon. He's automatically the most talented player on the offense, the first guy off the bus.
There you go. That's what they need to do. Now, that's not the model I'm in love with. I like drafting guys and developing guys and bringing guys up through the draft. That's how you used to win Super Bowls. But this isn't where we are anymore. Not where we are anymore.
And it's much harder to do it if you have one top 10 pick every 10 years.
No, I know.
You can't do it the same way. Plus, how many times have we been frustrated with trading down?
No, I know.
You can't keep replenishing via the draft if you don't have high enough draft picks, or when you do have decent draft picks, you trade down for value.
And what makes me cringe even more about what you're saying is that think about kind of when he traded up and was ultra aggressive in the draft the last true time. 2012 probably was the last real time he was ultra, Bill, aggressive in the draft. When he traded up, two picks in the first round, Hightower, Chandler Jones.
Yeah.
He was ultra aggressive. And look what happened there. Hightower.
Collins in the second round, right?
That wasn't that year. That was
that not the same year?
No, it was definitely not that year.
I thought it was Hightower. Collins, no, you're right.
Collins was 2013. 2012, Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower. And those draft picks directly led to not only Super Bowls, but a change in the culture of the defense. Dante Hightower made two of the biggest plays in the history of this organization in the Super Bowl. He made that tackle on Marshawn Lynch, and he made the strip sack of Matt Ryan. I mean, those are two of the biggest plays you could go back to in the history of the organization. And he made him because he's as good of a guy as you could get, and he went up and traded up to get him. He got huge talent. He was ultra-aggressive. No bargain basement, Bill. He was ultra-aggressive and got the guy he wanted, the guy that could perform at the highest level. You got to have more moves like that if you're going to win with Tom Brady going forward, and I'll include this year. Now, they did that a little bit with Josh Gordon, so let's see.
Yeah, a little bit with Josh Gordon. But don't forget, the value on Gordon was next to nothing, so it was an easy deal to make.
Right.
So, there, you know, you look at that and go, I'm really not giving up a whole lot here. I know there's no guarantee with this guy, but I'm not giving up a whole lot for a physical freak.
Le'Veon Bell is a good name to throw out there. Now, I get that he's trying to go to the market and get big-time money.
Yeah, so that was just an example playing into what you were talking about.
That kind of talent. Yeah. That kind of talent. And you got to do something here. You got to do something drastic, even if that means sacrificing. And it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot because you don't want to sacrifice and mortgage the entire future. You never. It's not in Belichick's DNA to do that. But if you want to win with Tom Brady.
Would anyone, I genuinely am curious about this. Would anyone be upset with Bill if he looked at it and go, Tom and I, you know, we have 2 years left. Let's just go all out. Let's mortgage the future and make sure we win one, maybe two more. Not a single Patriots fan would be upset with that. If he Dave Dombrowski'd it and said, you know, screw these draft picks, you know, screw some of these younger guys. We're going all out. We're signing top flight talent to make sure we put ourselves over the top. Not a single Patriots fan would be upset with that.
Not a single Patriots fan would be upset with that.
And it's the move they should do.
Yep.
I don't want Bill to be sitting here at the end of his time here and go, and worrying about making sure it's set up well for the next guy.
No, you can't.
I hate that.
Unless you're okay with not winning. Unless the priority is, hey, Bill, and I don't know what Robert Kraft thinks, because we don't know if he's the reason that the Patriots are in this situation. Because he made them trade Jimmy Garoppolo. We don't know. So I don't know what he'll, I mean, he's the owner. But yes, this has to be, if you want to win a title, that's what you got to do. You're right.
Look what the Rams did.
And they're not even dealing with a window.
They showed some promise, and then they went and added to it to try and put themselves over the top.
They loaded up, straight up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring in Cooks, bring in Sue. You loaded up.
Spaghetti's on the team.
You went. And you had a game plan.
How about
Aqib
Talib? How about Marcus Peters?
We can add to this team. We can make this team better. We can win a Super Bowl for the next 2-3 years if we add these pieces. I don't care about 5 years from now. There's no guarantee the 5 years even comes.
But that conversation, do you want to be the Ravens? You know, we had that a few years ago. We had that in 2013 when the Ravens won. Because the Ravens won, and then they had to lose everybody. They paid Joe Flacco. They lost everybody. And then they kind of went back to last place. And we had that conversation. Would you rather be the Patriots or the Ravens? Now, at that time, we all said the Ravens because the Patriots hadn't won. Now, that question is easy to answer. You'd obviously be that team because there is no tomorrow. Brady is going. He is going. Well, you know, I thought of this the other day. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, and maybe this is just a crazy theory. Do you think Tom Brady's very active on Instagram?
Yeah.
Do you think any of it, and again, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out there to you. Mm-hmm. Do you think any of it has to do with the fact that his career is winding down and that he's trying to capture some moments as it winds down? I mean, what do you do on the last day? You've worked at some place for 20 years. It's your last day. What happens?
I get the hell out of there.
Well, okay.
Say goodbye to you awful people.
Oh, you're just, because you suck and can't get along with anybody. But I'm saying.
That's true.
But here's the thing. You know, normally, when I left WPRI, I'll talk about this.
Yeah.
On my last day, I took pictures. Hey, see you, Ruth. See you, Yanni. You know, I took pictures to commemorate the last day, to you know, make a memory. I don't know. I don't know if Tom Brady, and who knows, we all know he's coming to the end of his career, is his increased activity on social media to document some of these things. Or because he knows he'll miss it when it's gone and he's nearing the end. Do you think that's part of this at all or no?
No, I think this is a brand thing.
He just likes
thing.
Super media. I mean, social media.
I think it's a brand thing.
Brand thing.
You know, get if you want to make a brand bigger than you, this is the way you do it.
No.
I think people have gotten into him about TB12 and what you need to do to extend your popularity beyond the football field, especially after you're done playing. This is one of those things.
Okay. It's a brand thing. You're right. But he likes it. It's more
than a brand thing. He definitely loves it.
You know,
he's always doing videos.
There,
And I also think it's young kids. You know,
because he has kids?
Young kids wants to make sure, you know, he has these memories
with them.
And, you know, what better way, especially when you're not around all that often, you know, film it. Take pictures of
it. So you think that's a way of him sort of making up for a lot of time where he's not around his kids?
Not necessarily making up for it, but you're on the same mind track that I'm on in terms of just like, oh, it's just what parents do.
Yeah.
You know, when your kids are a certain age, you take a ton of pictures because, especially when they're young and cute, you kind of want them to stay that way forever to a certain degree. And that's why you take far more pictures when they're 3, 4, 5 years old than you do when they're 13, 14, 15 years old.
You know what made me think of this? There was a picture he posted on Instagram, and it was him in the Patriots uniform, just him.
Yep.
And it's, I think this was back on Saturday or something,
okay.
last Saturday. And he said, it said 8 days. And he was counting down to the Jets game.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking to myself, is he really that focused on 8 days from now, the Jets? Like, and he's posting a picture of himself in the jersey. It almost made me wonder, is that him sort of savoring everything here with him being an NFL quarterback? You know, posting pictures of him in the jersey 8 days till the next game and kind of enjoying the fact that he has another football game in 8 days because he knows that it's not going to be that way for much longer.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, it's certainly possible that he's not counting down to the end of his career in his mind, but it's certainly possible that he's looking at this stuff and go, I need to capture as much of this as I can because it's not going to last much longer. We got a year, maybe two left.
Text. Pats don't have an Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, or even Mark Ingram. Brees is playing better than Brady because he has the better cast around him. Yeah. I agree with that.
That's kind of our point. That's kind of been our point.
Yeah.
You know, we brought up Brees in comparison to Brady, you know, mostly about the age and the fact that, you know, the NFL is different now. You can be either highly productive, if not the best quarterback in the league at 39, 40 years old when you couldn't have done that even in 2005. I mean, that's where it's coming in. And yes, Brees and the Saints have more firepower on offense. That's why they're in the position they're in right now, sitting pretty in the NFC. And that's why the Patriots are in their position, looking like the third best team in the AFC.
And can I just say one other thing? I want to make it clear. I know the NFL has changed its ways and defense might not be as crucial as it once was.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to say this. It's still critical. You don't forget about the talent you need on defense just because of the way the league is now.
Yeah,
it's just different. Look at what happened the other night in, where was it, Los Angeles, L.A. Rams, Kansas City Chiefs. There were some key defensive plays in that game that turned the game that, you know, essentially cost the Chiefs the game, a few. So some big interceptions. I mean, you still need people that now they might make a key defensive play that keeps it 45-41 or whatever, but you still need guys that can make a play. I'll never get tired of acquiring defensive talent, and I think they need to do it. I think they have to do it going forward if they're going to win.
And the sad part is you'd think they found the blueprint a number of years ago when they brought in Revis. It's like, hey, okay, we'll ball out for a year then. We'll pay this guy for 1 year. We'll get what we need out of him, and we'll win a championship at the end of the year. You haven't done it since. You haven't done it since. You haven't gone out and got that guy. And you know what? That Super Bowl you did win since then.
Well, wait a minute. Don't say that because they did go out and get Stephon Gilmore. They did get that. But that
no, but that's a different situation. That is, you know, going out acquiring a guy for a long-term deal. You know, there needs to be some more of these type of deals where, hey,
we need him to
win. Go get that talent right now, yeah. Period. Yes, Gilmore was for now and for the future, but sometimes you have to look at those deals and go, we need that guy now, period. I don't care what the cost is for this year. We know we're not going to do it past 1 year, but this guy will help us win the title right now.
The mindset should be that and only that. That's it. There are no other discussions to have. You have to be in that mode right now because, look, I don't know how you feel. The Chiefs, that team is for real. Their talent is for real. Mahomes is for real. And correct me if I'm wrong, how much has Eric Berry played this year for them? Okay. He's still there. He's coming back. So they're only going to get a little bit better defensively. And they don't need to be all that much better with the way they play offense. So the Patriots, they have to find some way to enhance some part of their game. Now, if Gronk can start that process tomorrow, great. But they've got to find some way to enhance some aspect of that game, of their game, of that team. Something. Whether it's Gronk and Gordon and Michelle exploding down the stretch here, or the defense really turns a corner, I don't have much faith in that situation because why would I? Were they just going to flip a switch and change their mentality and approach? I don't think so. So you hope, I think their best chance is you hope that Gronk and Edelman and Gordon and Michelle, they really come back and they come on and they really gel. And the defense figures it out a little bit, figures out how just not to suck. And you combine those two things, and then all of a sudden you're right there in the AFC Championship game with a chance to win it, and we'll see what happens in the Super Bowl.
I think the one cure-all is the defense needs to play better. The defense needs to get off the field quicker. The defense needs some three and outs and put the ball back in the hands of Brady. Just get Brady.
Yeah, but isn't that asking a lot at this point? They've never been able to do that.
I know, but like I said, the offense completely fixes itself if you do fix the defense right there.
I've been worried
about the offense, you know, doing what they can as long as Brady gets the ball enough with enough time.
Yes.
At all. So the defense is what needs to start to turn around, period. We talked earlier about Gronk. Obviously, he needs to come together, but if the defense, even if Gronk comes in, it's not a guarantee they can even make the Super Bowl. The defense absolutely needs to start to turn it around and get off the field, period.
Thank you. I've been trying to will this into real life. Yes. Yes. They need the defense to play better. We talked about that in March.
We've been talking about it since last season.
Defense. They need a guy. That's where the help should have come from for Tom Brady. Forget Josh Gordon.
They needed that.
They needed that, sure.
Especially with Edelman out and Chris Hogan not being what people thought he was.
I still would have picked a defensive impact player over Josh Gordon. You need it. You could use it.
Eli Apple?
No. Impact player.
Did you watch the Saints game?
Yeah, I know. He's playing. He came from the Giants. He's played well. I'm talking about, well, fine. If he wants to make the impact, fine. Give me Eli Apple. I mean, at the time, I wouldn't have been celebrating Eli freaking Apple. But if I need somebody that makes an impact. So whoever would make an impact, I take him. But that's where I think that's what you just said is where Tom Brady could have gotten the most help, and they've dropped the ball. They need to get teams off the field to give Brady more of a chance and to not make him feel like he has to score 1,000 points a game. That's a more efficient approach than just loading up offensive talent. Now, hey, it's great for Drew Brees. It's working. Their defense is playing well, though.
Yeah, but their defense is fantastic, and it was good last year, too.
So they need something. They need to do something. Bill Belichick does. I mean, who's the defensive coordinator down there? Is that Mike Nolan? I mean, they don't hire people that can come in and offer a quick fix. That's not the Patriots.
No.
So there's another thing. There's another thing we could talk about. Maybe that's a way Bill needs to change his ways. We haven't even talked about that.
I think that's a very good point, though.
We got to go to break. We'll expand on that when we get back. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
It's Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. Call the show at 401-737-1287.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen. Michigan falls to Ohio State. What, you know, final 62-39, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw it flash. Listen, I am a Jim Harbaugh guy. This one, tough to defend. Tough to defend this. 0-4 now against Ohio State all time. Playoffs staring you in the face. You probably have the better team. I mean, Ohio State has not had a good year by their standards, and you go in and get embarrassed. That's a fireable offense. Do I think they should fire him? No, but that's a fireable offense. I mean, I'm totally embarrassed. If I'm Michigan.
Never beating them is embarrassing if you're a Michigan.
That's
whoever's the head coach on the either side of that rivalry, if you have a goose egg against the other team that many games, you're probably gone. You're likely gone. I don't think they should fire him, though.
No, I don't either.
Just let him keep building up that program because he's going to build a powerhouse at some point. I believe it. But, this is really – he deserves to be on the hot seat, though. Not only did you lose arguably your most important regular season game of the year, but you got embarrassed. And you gave up 62 points.
I want to get back to that conversation we were having before the break about what Bill Belichick needs to do going forward here as the sun sets on Tom Brady's career. We talked about him changing his ways. One way he could do that, the first thing that pops to my mind is player personnel. Getting out of bargain basement bill mode and actually going and being aggressive and going out to get somebody. Overpaying for a talented star that can come in and immediately impact the team and be a game changer, week in and week out. The other way that Bill can do this and change his ways as Tom Brady's career, as the window shuts, hire a defensive coordinator that can immediately make an impact. He doesn't like to do that. He never has. But these are different days, and you need to find a way to win and win now, or it's all over for everyone. The first guy I think of now, is he too old? Can you get this guy? Would it work? Probably not, but Wade Phillips. He was a guy, I remember his daughter once upon a time tweeted out when he was, I think, let go from the Rams or the Broncos. I think it was the Broncos. Anybody want a top 10 defense? I mean, he literally came in and made, he was a kingmaker on defense. He made the defense legitimate overnight, if not elite. I'll never forget going back to the Mark Sanchez era in New York. The Texans' defense was dog crap. Dog crap. The next year they get Wade Phillips, they were the number one pass defense. With the way the Patriots play football, with Tom Brady still playing like Tom Brady, as we both assume he will going forward, the Jets tomorrow going forward, the Patriots don't need an elite number one defense, number one against the pass. Sure, that'd be great. They just need not to suck, as we've outlined many times on this show. Super Bowl last year. Many times we've outlined that. Wade Phillips or somebody like that could do that for them. Make the defense legitimate enough to not suck. Because they haven't proven under Bill Belichick or Matt Patricia or Flo that they can't avoid sucking. They've sucked sometimes. Unfortunately, they've sucked more often than not at times. So in order to ensure that, you could go outside of the comfort zone, outside of the norm, and bring in a defensive coordinator that would be a bona fide upgrade and get the defense to a place of stability and of consistency where you know they're going to be good. Don't have to be elite. Just give me good if Tom Brady's still playing like Tom Brady or close to that. So those are a couple ways that Bill Belichick could really change how he does business, how he operates. And I think he has to going forward if they're going to win. We'll see if they have enough this year.
It's an interesting proposal that you bring up in terms of going to get Wade Phillips or someone of that ilk, a strong defensive mind to come in here and just kind of take control of the defense and come up with a new game plan, something that's a little more aggressive, a little less bend, don't break.
Oh, how about no bend, don't break?
There you go.
That's
for you. But, Wade Phillips' philosophy seems to be the antithesis of Belichick's philosophy over the last couple of years, and Wade Phillips wants you to be very aggressive and go get it. And Bill wants you to, contain. Don't get burned by big plays. Contain. Keep them in front. I'm tired of that.
Yeah.
And when you don't have the talent to do it right and the smart players to do that system right, then you got to go get aggressive playmakers.
Well, can I just ask you something real quick?
Yeah.
Do you think, though, part of the reason Bill implored that technique, bend but don't break, contain, contain, is because he knew that his offense would score. And if not more often, score in bunches. So he was sort of playing to that defensively. Do you think that's part of the thinking? Because if Tom Brady is kind of going down a little bit, a tick, well, then I think if that's your thinking, doesn't your defensive philosophy need to change?
Yes. But I think the problem is you're seeing a guy in a defense that's been stuck in 2003. And they want to play the same way they played in 2003, but you don't even have close to the talent you had. It's like you're so convinced that the philosophy is what worked and not necessarily the players that actually worked that you're saying you're sticking with that philosophy no matter what. Saying we can plug and play different guys because this philosophy makes sense. It's what works in the NFL. But you need the players to pull it off. You need smart players to pull it off. And you haven't had those players. You've had freelance guys like Jamie Collins who you couldn't wait to get out of here and ship them off to Cleveland and get nothing in return. You had an aggressive playmaker in Chandler Jones for many reasons. You couldn't wait to get him out of here. Those guys didn't fit the philosophy, but they were two of the best athletes you had on defense. You had playmakers there. Instead, you'd rather get lesser quality players to make sure they fit into this one rigid system that unless you have the players doesn't work.
Well, you need to have both. You need to have the talent. You need to have guys that will fit into that system. You know, I don't know what to tell you. It feels like they've got to change something, though. I mean, it does. Because last year didn't work. Now, did they lose that Super Bowl because of the benching? We'll never know.
Regardless, benching or not, the defense was dog crap.
But here's the thing, though. Forget about the Super Bowl last year because things are rapidly changing. Tom Brady is getting older and it's happening. Mm-hmm. It's happening fast. I mean, that was a long time ago. So you need to adjust on the fly quickly. I don't know if this – you could get into a situation where, oh, crap, Brady's not even close to what he once was. And I'm not saying they will, but you could. He's not even close to what he once was. And this defense, if that's the case, simply isn't good enough. I mean, they'll be out in wild card weekend.
Oh, yeah. Without Tom Brady, this team does not look like a playoff team.
No, they're out wild card weekend.
If that, because this defense isn't a playoff defense without Tom Brady on the other side,
no.
Making sure that they actually put up the points they need.
So I'm just wondering, does he need to rapidly change things, get ahead of it, before? I don't know what, it just feels to me, like when they traded Jimmy Garoppolo, everything should have gone out the window. That was a year ago. And it doesn't feel like things have gone out the window.
No, it's almost like they're kind of
maintaining
that same
path. Way they've always done things.
Yeah, and there's no evolving. There's no adapting right now. And it's very frustrating to watch. I mean, they're still a very good team, but they're a long way away from being a dominant football team right now.
It feels, and give them a pass last year because you're in it. Last year, you're in it.
Yep.
And you just kind of go with what you have last year, and it happened. The Jimmy Garoppolo trade happened during the middle of the season. But it feels to me like since Jimmy Garoppolo was shipped away, there needed to be an immediate changing of philosophy. Not so much in the immediate then and now, but looking forward, down the road. Absolutely, there had to be a change in the way you thought, the way you went about your business. And it appears now that we sit 13 and a half months since that trade, that has not occurred. And they are going with it as business as usual.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
You're absolutely right. Once you trade Garoppolo and you trade the perceivable future franchise player for this team, the entire direction should have been, okay, we're going to keep loading up year by year, do what we can, maximize this window. And, you know, if you have a owner with half of a brain, he's going to look at it and go, okay, you're going to load up, you're going to try and win two, maybe three titles in the last 4 or 5 years of this. I'm cool with that. I know the fans know that there's going to be 2, 3, 4, 5 years of just, you know, early 1990s Patriots again.
Right. And you hope you have whoever the coach in place is, you hope that he's good enough to keep the team somewhat competitive. You know that. And I don't think you said it earlier. The fans wouldn't have been upset about that.
No.
I certainly wouldn't have. But it feels like when you traded Jimmy Garoppolo, you needed to move on. And all kinds of philosophies had to change at that very moment. The moment he was traded, it changed the course of the organization. Tom Brady was here to stay, and you had to do things that were that helped Brady succeed at his advanced age, with the short window, all those things. Whether that's getting him the weapons or getting the defensive coordinator to come in and immediately change the culture. And it just doesn't feel like they've made any of those changes. No. They've just kind of kept plodding along.
No, I mean, he lost two key wide receivers in the offseason.
Yeah.
And you waited until week three of the season to acquire a quality wide receiver.
And that's only because it was desperate times.
Because your other guy was hurt, he was suspended for four games, and Julian Edelman. If he wasn't suspended, I highly, highly doubt this team would have gone out and got Josh Gordon. I highly doubt it. But instead, you lose Cooks in the offseason, which I kind of understand. You lose Amendola in the offseason. Two guys that were good wide receivers with Tom Brady. I know people look at Cooks and kind of scrub it over a little bit because they've, you know, that what happened in the Super Bowl lingers with them, but he was a pretty damn good wide receiver for the Patriots last year.
Yeah.
He wasn't what we thought we were getting from the Saints, but he was still pretty good. And you lose two of those guys and you don't replace them. And then you also lose a trusted, valuable asset out of the backfield to the Titans in Deion Lewis, and you replace him with an often injured rookie. So your philosophy, you got rid of an older wide receiver, I understand. You got rid of a wide receiver that might have been a little too expensive, I kind of understand. You got rid of an explosive game maker and replaced him with an often injured rookie, I don't really understand. But what you're not doing here is making sure the best players are on the Patriots and making sure they're on the field for the Patriots.
See, I don't know what happened because in 2014, when they beat the Seahawks that year, that's what they did. It felt like that's what they were doing.
Yep.
We need to get it. We need to get after it to win one more.
And that should have been, you know, that philosophy should have carried over.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you can't keep recycling sort of that philosophy. But they really haven't. There have been no, you know what? Again, they did get Gilmore. But I don't know if that was in relationship to what was going on with Malcolm Butler, and they didn't know what was happening there. I mean, they didn't want to re-sign Butler.
But they did. They threw the offer out there, supposedly.
That's true.
You know, $60 million, supposedly. I mean,
they didn't want to
Andy Hart did tell us a couple weeks ago. He's like, I'm not entirely sure they even did offer that.
Okay.
I think that's just hearsay, but it's out there enough for people to know that they did offer him something.
They didn't. But they didn't do what, and whether or not they should have, that's a separate discussion.
Yeah.
But they didn't do what they needed to do to keep him. They could have tried to keep him. They could have paid more to keep him. They didn't do that. It just feels like they haven't changed the philosophy. There's been too many times where guys like, do you think a guy like Jordan Matthews or Jordan Richards would ever be on the field for the Rams?
No.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. There are still too many times where that kind of player is on the field.
He would have got beat out by Reynolds, who I believe Josh Reynolds, who was a pretty sure an undrafted.
Well, I'm just saying, you can't have guys like that on the field.
No.
There's too many times they still have those kinds of guys on the field.
Well, you can't keep missing either. You can't keep missing on draft picks like that. Look how many wide receivers have come through that they've picked up in the draft, and literally none of them are here. Dobson?
Okay, then change. Then fire the draft people. Or get new draft people. Or change the draft a lot. I mean, change.
But see, here's what frustrates me sometimes. Because you've had these two moments in the past 11 years of the Patriots where you look at should have been kind of philosophy-changing moments. After 06, you have crap on offense around Brady, so you go out and get Randy Moss and Wes Welker. And yes, you didn't win the Super Bowl that year, but you were a stone's throw away from running the gauntlet and being the greatest team of all time. And you had a fantastic offense. And then a couple years later, 7 years later, you go out and get a game changer on defense because you're having problems there. And you win. And then after that, you don't do any of that anymore. You don't go out and acquire that talent that you know you need. You knew after 06 you needed wide receiver help. You absolutely knew you needed it. So you went out and got Randy Moss, who was available bargain basement, And you went and dealt for Welker.
Yeah, see, I don't think that's a changing of the culture, though. That's just, you need a talent. You got to get some guys. Now they need to change.
No, it wasn't changing of the culture. It was a change of philosophy. Look what they were doing before that. They didn't have high-priced wide receivers before that.
Yeah.
During the first part of the dynasty. Troy Brown was the number one guy for Super Bowls and maybe
David
two.
Givens.
But Givens. And then you have Branch, who was a nice player, but not a great player.
He was really good.
And then you have Richie Caldwell. You have garbage, absolutely garbage. And then you knew, we need to go get more talent around this guy. And you went out and got it. And then a couple of years later, you knew, we need more talent over here. And then you went out and got it, and you won. And then since then, now we're going to, sift through the scrap heap. We're going to take our late draft picks, maybe trade down a little bit. You haven't done any of that, and you've traded away some of those really talented guys because you didn't want to pay them.
Whether it's getting changing the way you hire coaches to get a guy that can have an immediate impact on one side of the ball, whether it's changing the way you scout players to make sure you hit more often than not, or whether it's just spending more to get guys that you absolutely want. I mean, why isn't Hakeem Hicks on this team?
It's a very good question, because he is an absolute monster right now.
I mean, that pisses me off.
With a good, easy deal. What is it, four years, $48 million?
So, it pisses me off, and that's a guy that you could use. I mean, that's a guy that should never have gotten away in this era of Tom Brady. Never should have let that guy get away. You can't have that guy get away in Tom Brady's twilight zone, twilight era, whatever you want to call it. And they did. And there was no changing of philosophy there. Now, was that before the Garoppolo trade? I think so. But you need to make sure that kind of guy stays. With or without Garoppolo, Brady is older. If he's a starter, that kind of guy has to stay. Has to stay. So I don't know what to tell you. Yes, I do. We have to go to break. It's the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
It's Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
Where are we?
401-737-1287, phone number. We're taking you up to Bruins pregame, 6:30. Bruins getting set for the game tonight against, where's their schedule?
Montreal.
The Bruins and the Habs. Claude, I'm going to ask a question I think I know the answer to. Did you catch any of Tiger and Phil yesterday?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw randomly, I jumped on Twitter for a few minutes and was just looking to see what people were talking about. I did see you all over it.
So I'm just going to make my point about it right now.
Make your point and I'll crap on it.
Okay. Was it worth $20? I guess so.
Wait, you paid for it?
Yeah. Because I got it on TV. We were at my in-laws and we all kind of just bought it.
Okay.
You know, it was like we all went in.
So it was free on Bleacher Report.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's because there was an error, but whatever. Here's the thing about the whole experience. I thought it was underwhelming. And what frustrates me is there were so many opportunities for gold and they just blew it. This event was, and I love golf. You know that. Mm-hmm. I love golf.
Yeah.
This event was way, way too much about the golf. I could have cared less. I could not have cared less about this golf. This wasn't about golf. This was about the show. This was about the commentary, the color, the banter.
The personality.
The personality. That's why I watched. I didn't care about the golf. I didn't even care who won. I didn't care that Tiger chipped in on 17. It was nice. Didn't hurt. That's not why I watched this. I watched this for the color, for the conversation, for the chatter, for the awkwardness, the weird stuff I wanted to see something, and they really gave me nothing. Now, Tiger's worth $750 million. He moves the needle more than anybody ever.
Mm-hmm.
So why does he need to be worried about entertaining me? You know, he can just do his thing. He is the entertainer. But this format, I mean, can you imagine? I just kept thinking, how funny would it be if right now he said this, or if right now Tiger did this, or if Phil muttered this? There were so many opportunities. So many opportunities.
And it just lets you down. A one-on-one golf match just let you down.
All he had to say was, because it was kind of getting cool, you know?
What do you mean?
Like at the end of the night, it was cool. It was like 55 degrees.
Okay, cold out. Yeah, got it.
cold, yeah. You know, like, would it have been so hard for Tiger to just say, hey, Phil, it's getting kind of cool. Your nipple's hard? I would have laughed. That would have been gold for me. That's why I watch for commentary like that. Not that. But that would
I'm just surprised you and your family sat around and watched a glorified charity match between these two guys.
Well, I liked seeing it. It was kind of fun to watch. There were so many opportunities for better television. And it just frustrated the hell out of me. I mean, it wouldn't have taken much. You know, Tiger hits a good shot. Tiger shimmies the shoulders. Tiger does the wiggle. Yeah, that would have been funny. Random, weird, but funny.
Just two guys out there having fun competing with each other. That's what you wanted them to just kind of goof around, have fun, put on a show for you. Dance,
yeah,
monkeys, dance.
I did
dance.
Not care about the golf. I saw an article by Bob Harrig of ESPN afterwards, and he does a good job covering golf. But he's talking about the golf wasn't good enough to captivate us. And that is not why I watched. I didn't care about the golf. I didn't care if they made birdie on every hole. I wanted the personalities. I wanted color. That's what I wanted. So I thought they dropped the ball with this presentation.
I just think the whole thing is completely asinine and ridiculous in itself. I don't really understand why anyone would pay $20. I know there was like literally 20 of you guys, so it was a dollar each. That makes a little more sense to me.
Yeah, it was a group. The money, all right, I see what you wouldn't have paid the money.
No, okay. I wouldn't have streamed it for free on Bleacher Report either. Yeah. But I could care less about a one-on-one golf tournament. It takes a lot for me to give a crap on a Sunday of a major.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to turn on a major on a Sunday just because it's the Sunday of a major. There has to be something going on for me to actually invest my time into it. You know, a compelling race to, you know, to see who wins that tournament. That's interesting. If it's just, you know, one guy's cruising the field, it's Sunday, he's likely going to win by a landslide. I'm not watching. I need drama in it. Because I don't generally like the sport all that much to begin with, so if you don't add that element of drama on top of it, I'm completely uninterested.
Well, that's what the $9 million was supposed to do.
Yeah, but it doesn't between two guys that are worth
$750 million. Yeah.
Exactly. That's nothing.
Yeah. Well, I didn't care even about the $9 million. I cared about the commentary. I thought it was going to be a reality show. Tiger and Phil reality TV, they just happened to be golfing. But it wasn't.
Were hoping it was more of like candid camera catching them on the golf course, being themselves with each other.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you were hoping
for. Yeah, but they got...
It was overproduced. It was schlocky, right?
And not only that, then I'm listening to the announcers talking while they're talking. Shut up, EJ. And I like Ernie Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But be quiet. I'm trying to hear Tiger. You know, ideally what they should have done, get the announcers out. You don't need announcers. Get somebody on the course.
Or mic them up.
Well, get somebody on the course. And there was a guy there, but he was more of like a sideline reporter. Get some colorful MC on the course that can rile them up during the match. He can add some, you know, throw some fire to him. Or wait, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Stir the pot a little bit. You know, have the guy on the course do that.
Just
add to it.
Raise the interest level.
Yeah,
that's
I
it.
Mean.
You wanted Kevin Hart to be the MC.
Kevin Hart.
Joking around
right.
with these two guys while they battled it out for $9 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that already sounds more interesting. I don't think Kevin Hart's the funniest guy in the world, but that's already more interesting. At least he has personality. Because Phil and Tiger don't have personality. I mean, they're pretty... Phil's personality is
like, you know,
purely predicated that he's, you know, a lovable underdog.
Phil?
Should have won a hell of a lot more. You know, that's where the lovability for Phil comes from. Tiger?
He's a people's person, yeah.
Tiger? I mean, the most interesting thing about him is that he couldn't keep it in his pants.
You know who would have been perfect? This is what I'm talking about. You know who I wanted walking the course with them, with the microphone in his hand, interacting with those?
Who?
Kirk Minahan.
Why?
Because somebody like that, somebody that wouldn't be afraid to say something that would get somebody uncomfortable, that would make just didn't care. Have Dave Portnoy do it. Somebody that wouldn't have given a crap and just said whatever they wanted.
Someone who actually has a personality, unlike Tiger and Phil.
Or whoever Bacon was on the course with them yesterday. Shane Bacon. I don't even know who that is. But he was just a scared sideline reporter trying to sort of be funny. I mean, they should have had Charles Barkley, instead of him sitting up there with Johnson, put him on the course. Let him talk the whole time to the golfers. while they're playing. That would have been more fun for me. But, you know, that would have been better. They didn't have that.
I'm glad I didn't watch this dumpster fire.
I wouldn't. Okay.
You're making it sound like it was.
No, it was.
Crap. Really.
I wasn't tortured watching it. There were so many opportunities for it to be better. And I'm a TV junkie.
Sure.
So I was watching it for the industry aspect. Was it going to change television and how sports are broadcast? I didn't know. No, but I was watching it because of that too. But there were just so many reasons and opportunities that were missed. It just made me so upset. But I didn't care about the golf. I didn't care how many birdies, how many putts were missed. Who cares?
No.
Those.
If you're going into it to watch this great duel, I think you got your priorities out of whack.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
If it was 2000.
It's a meaningless game.
Right. If it was 2003, maybe we'd have a different conversation. If it was Phil and Tiger at that time. But this is a different situation.
Yeah, or maybe if there was like $100 million on the line, something that's more tangible than what amounts to, you know, if you averaged out with the people that are listening here, it would be like $90 what they put up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Compared to what the rest of us have in our bank accounts, you're basically putting up $90.
Okay, David Faraday, texter. David Faraday
okay.
would have been
that,
better.
That makes sense.
Would have been better.
I understand that.
Now,
I can get
here's
that.
The thing. Faraday is involved in the game. So yeah. He's used to calling. Now, he's colorful. I love Faraday. I think he's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also used to, you know, covering a major and being on the course during a major. So it would have been hard for him to sort of get out of his like comfort zone the way that it was hard for Tiger and Phil to get out of it. Because when push came to shove, they came back to locked in, focused golfers, which is not what I was looking for. The reason I say Portnoy or somebody like that is because they're not used to that. They'd just be having a good time.
Yeah.
Like Barkley. Faraday, though, would have been better. Faraday would have definitely been better. That's a good one. Because he would have said some stuff. He would have made some wisecracks. They both probably been on his show. If you're going to stay within the golfing world, that would have been the ideal choice. I can't believe they didn't do that. Stupid. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.